Welcome to What the Tech, sponsored by ProServe IT. We're diving into the world of technology to demystify the complex and keep you informed. In this episode, you'll discover how Azure Virtual Desktop can offer maximum flexibility and control for your virtual desktop infrastructure. We'll explore the key concepts and benefits, helping you understand how it can transform your organization's virtual desktop experience. Stay tuned for insights, real-world examples, and expert guidance that will empower you to harness the full potential of Azure Virtual Desktop.
And welcome, everybody. My name is Bill Kastner. I'm an Azure Solutions Architect at ProServe IT. I'm going to be the presenter today, walking through our Azure Virtual Desktop solution. From an agenda perspective, we're going to touch briefly on sort of the Microsoft Cloud Desktop solutions as a whole. Then we'll dive into Azure Virtual Desktop. We'll come back to choosing the best option between the different cloud offerings that we have. Next steps. So one of the reasons virtual desktop or VDI has become so prevalent over the last couple of years and really part of the conversation really comes down to a lot of the evolving needs of end users, right? We have more focus on security and being able to lock down infrastructure while ensuring that users are able to do the work that they need to be able to do. It's trying to actually start to lock things down so that users don't have free access to everything. And this is especially important when we have remote users or temporary workforces or people in other geographies. We need to give access to our environment to be able to perform certain tasks. But we also want to limit what that process is going to look like. We also are facing users with requirements for more higher capacity computing, right? Where they need the ability to run specialized workloads. So things like CAD and CAM and SAT and some of these other larger workloads. The CAD-CAM is a great example where typically you need a dedicated graphics card or GPU, right? Provisioning that for users, especially with users working from home, can often be a challenge. And so being able to leverage a centralized solution like virtual desktop or VDI can often be a great solution. We're seeing more and more BYOPC, so bring your own PC to work, right? Where organizations are moving away from being in the hardware business and providing desktops or laptops to users. And instead, potentially offering a budget to the users for them to go and purchase their own machines. This is great from an IT stance in that you don't need to worry about managing those endpoints typically, but obviously also introduces a number of security risks. And we look at solutions like cloud PCs and cloud VDI to, again, allow those users access to our corporate environment, but lock things down so we're not opening ourselves up to unnecessary risk. We have disaster recovery. Obviously, that's an important requirement. We want to make sure that users are able to have access to their environment, be able to work continuously, make sure that we have the availability necessary to ensure that people are productive. And then lastly, if we look at temporary workforces and mergers and acquisitions together, anytime that we're looking to onboard new users and make them immediately productive, VDI can make a lot of sense, right? In either of these use cases, we're typically, historically, looking at purchasing a new laptop or taking one out of inventory, provisioning, shipping it to the user, having them then go and finish setup and get things going. And it could be a couple of days before that user is actually truly productive. With a VDI infrastructure, we can have that user productive in a matter of minutes. I just give them the link to log into their own virtual desktop and let them start being productive and start adding value to the business. Right? So this could be an easy way to onboard new users and can also make offboarding that much easier down the road as well. So challenges that we often see when looking at these types of solutions or these needs, employee experience and productivity. So I touched on productivity. The fact that we can get a user on board and productive in a matter of minutes is huge. But we also want to ensure that it's positive end user experience. The user has the resources they need, that they're able to be as productive as possible. We obviously worry about data security and compliance, right? So data leakage is a huge concern with a lot of organizations. Where, the more that we are becoming cloud-centric, the more our users are becoming distributed. We need to give users access to the data they need to be able to do their work. But we also want to try to limit the amount of risk of that data leaving the organization, right? And so being able to actually lock things down can be a huge help to that. We deal with VPN issues and data center capacity and performance issues all the time. And these can be great use cases where VDI can really come into play. VPNs have been our traditional mechanism for accessing corporate infrastructure. And it's always had pros and cons, right? It's yet another technology layered on top of Windows that we need to be able to support and troubleshoot with end users and manage. And that can often be sometimes easy, sometimes not so much. And then once we have that user connected, we're now expecting them to traverse that point-to-site VPN to access corporate resources. And then we start getting into performance issues where our applications don't behave the way we would expect them to, because we're not in the office sitting on that same virtual network with the application as we would have been historically. And then lastly, we also have issues with things like budgets and skills and resource constraints. So budget, obviously key. One of the nice things of moving to a VDI style solution is, you know, because we're moving into Azure, we're moving into an OpEx model, right? Where we're not having to invest in large capital outlays, build out a whole lot of infrastructure on-prem with the assumption that it's going to get used. We're leveraging Azure in this scenario. And so we don't really care about the future. We focus on building what we need today, understanding there's a monthly consumption cost, and then we let it grow as our needs grow, rather than having to pre-provision all that hardware and just have it sitting there. From a skills perspective, anytime we deploy that new technology, it can be a challenge. And again, one of the benefits of Azure is we have a common interface. So regardless of what technology we deploy in Azure, it's a familiar look and feel. It's the same click-through process, and it makes it much easier for organizations to adapt and deploy net new technologies without having to understand the technology from the ground up. And then resource constraints, relatively straightforward. That's always going to be a challenge for IT organizations. There's always way more work than IT staff. And so it's finding balances and figuring out ways that we're going to support that. So to help address this, Microsoft has a couple different mechanisms or options to provide desktops or devices, desktop, laptop, that type of device out to users. So we are going to focus largely on Windows 11 just because it is the current operating system, but all the comments here would apply equally to both Windows 10 and 11, and both of them are obviously completely valid at this point. So our first option is our traditional native installation on a PC or tablet. So this is the way we've always done things in the past. We install Windows 10, Windows 11 on a laptop, ship it out to the user and let them just work locally. We have Azure Virtual Desktop, which is where we're going to focus our time today, which is our cloud VDI solution, where we're basically we're worrying less about the endpoint and focusing more on consolidating our virtual desktops and our desktops inside of our infrastructure, our Azure environment, and really centralize that environment and ensure that we're providing a positive experience end user application to endpoint. And the nice thing with VDI, or sorry, with Azure Virtual Desktop is, again, it gives us flexibility. It allows us to build the solution that we need to meet our needs. And then lastly, we have Windows 365, which is Microsoft's cloud PC solution, which is really designed to be a turnkey solution. There's really not much in the way of administration that's required. It's a matter of dropping in a license on a user, provision the desktop, and users have immediate access. So it's very turnkey, very quick to provision. All these are great examples of ways in which we can best support our users. Most organizations, again, traditionally dealing with native clients, but as more and more we continue to live in this remote world where users are probably never coming back or never fully coming back, we're starting to see a higher level of adoption of these different cloud technologies, either VDI or PC, to help support these remote workers. So I did do a session on Windows 365 earlier this year. I think Betty's going to be posting a link to that in the chat. So I said, we're going to be focusing on Azure Virtual Desktop today, but this is really one of two possible solutions to meet customer requirements. So we'll dive into Azure Virtual Desktop. We'll go through the session you can view on Windows 365. And at the end of this, I will talk a little bit about why you might pick one or the other. But yeah, that's a great example, or a great way to go and find out more about Windows 365 is looking into our earlier session. Last slide, the comparative between the two. So as mentioned, we really have two sort of virtual desktop solutions available to us. So Windows 365, it's designed around secure work on personal PCs. So again, turnkey, you don't care what the endpoint is necessarily. You can lock down any access to that endpoint, right? So that everything is isolated inside of that virtual desktop. Because it is that very quick provision, deprovision process, it makes onboarding and offboarding employees really easy. Simple to buy. So it is a license the same as any other Microsoft 365 license. So the same way you buy a license for Office 365 to allocate to a user, we're doing the same thing with Windows 365. We're purchasing a subscription license with a set number of CPU cores and memory and storage, allocating it to the user and then provisioning that desktop. So it makes it really easy to support. No employer or IT special skills training is necessary because we're not building out a VDI infrastructure, right? We're only providing desktops to our users. And then if we have something like Intune or endpoint management to support our traditional desktops, we can enroll these desktops in that same solution and manage that way. But so we're leveraging skills that we already understand without having to learn anything net new. And then we have that quick scale and resize capability, where if we do find that a user is under provisioned, you know, with a simple reboot, we can add additional CPU cores or additional memory or additional storage to ensure we're meeting that user's business needs. We look to the other side, Azure Virtual Desktop. This is really a corporate solution to help shift your existing on-prem solutions to Azure. So Windows 365 does have tie-ins to your Azure environment and have the ability to tie back into on-premises environments as well. A lot of the core focus around Windows 365 is based off of that cloud-first or SaaS-based model. We're assuming we're using a lot of cloud services. We don't really need to tie back into a whole lot of on-prem infrastructure. Although, as I said, that is an option. But when we look at Azure Virtual Desktop, it's really taking our existing infrastructure, ideally moving it to Azure, so our backend and our client frontend are sitting side by side on the same network, which is important. But this is more of a natural shift where we can actually take that desktop experience, manage it start to finish inside of our own tenant rather than relying on Microsoft, and give us a lot of flexibility in how we actually want to provision and deploy. For organizations that already have VDI experience, that might be remote desktop services or the old terminal services. It might be Citrix's Zen solution. It might be VMware Horizon. All those different knowledge bases that our staff may have can be applied here as well, as there are ways to extend Azure Virtual Desktop to leverage either Citrix or VMware solutions, or we can actually port remote desktop solution into Azure as well. And then lastly, one of the key things that Azure Virtual Desktop brings is remote app streaming. And this is important for organizations that maybe don't want to provide a full public desktop to their users with everything under the sun. Maybe just have that one business critical app. It's finicky. It's dependent maybe on older versions of Windows or has other challenges. With Azure Virtual Desktop, we can choose just to publish that single application to users, leave everything else the same, and just integrate it into their typical desktop experience. And we get that sort of flexibility with Azure Virtual Desktop. All right. So stepping into Azure Virtual Desktop as its own solution. Azure Virtual Desktop, or AVD, which is probably what I'll call it through this session just out of habit, is Microsoft's mechanism to provide a multi-session Windows 11 experience. So if we think similar to what we have with terminal services or remote desktop services, where we're stacking multiple users on a given host, we're doing the same thing here, but with Windows 10 or 11. And so we're able to take advantage of all the rich features and capability that brings to the bear. We have optimizations for Microsoft Office 365, which are important. Again, as we leverage more and more cloud services, that's going to be a key requirement. We have migration paths for taking existing remote desktop services or RDS environments and port them into Azure. And again, because this is an Azure solution, we can deploy and scale easily, really no time at all, versus our traditional having to build that infrastructure out. So delving into these a little bit deeper. So as noted, this is Microsoft's only means of providing that multi-session Windows 11 experience, right? So if we want to be able to provide all the rich capabilities that Windows client operating system provides, this is the way in which we do that. We have the capability to provide either multi-session or single session instances, right? So multi-session is typically for light or medium workloads, where all of our traditional office workers and such would be able to stack, but we might get 10 or 20 or 30 users on an individual host, depending on workload. But we also have that single session model where if we have users who have that CAD/CAM requirement or have very stringent resource requirements, we can build a dedicated desktop for them. As noted, we have the ability for app remoting, right? So we can actually build out, you know, applications and publish and integrate them natively into that user's start menu, right? And that's where, again, Windows 7 comes into play here as well. We have a legacy application that maybe has been holding us back from completely eliminating Windows 7 from our environment. Leveraging Azure Virtual Desktop or AVD gives us a means to address that, right? Where we can spin up a Windows 7 VDI host in Azure. We can install and publish that application that's been holding us back. Again, when users, you know, who have access to that application, when they click their start menu on their laptops, they'll see that application the same as they do all locally installed applications. But when they click on it, it's actually going to launch that session out in the cloud, but it allows us to move away from some of those legacy operating systems or legacy system requirements. From an optimization perspective, again, pretty much anybody who's looking at Azure Virtual Desktop is most likely a Microsoft 365's customer. When we look at provisioning things like OneDrive and Outlook, in order to provide a positive end user experience, we really need to focus on caching, right? So with Outlook, we have our OST file. With OneDrive, we have local synced data. These are important components to ensure the user is productive and that we're able to get them operational very quickly and provide a consistent experience. So with Azure Virtual Desktop, we have a mechanism to basically maintain all of that information that's unique to that user, make it instantly available to that user as part of the login process. We leverage profile containers for this. So one of the nice things with Azure Virtual Desktop is everything that is unique to an individual user actually gets stored on a separate disk outside of the operating system. And so regardless of what desktop that user connects to, as part of the login experience, that virtual disk with everything unique to them gets attached as part of the login, provides a seamless experience. But it gives us a lot of flexibility because everything that's unique to that user is just sitting on an external disk getting attached, right? So there's not a whole lot of configuration such required. And it makes it very simple to start to provision users and have them shift from desktop to desktop. For those customers who might be using remote desktop services today, there is a path forward to Azure. So you do have the ability to take an existing RDS environment, port that into Azure Virtual Desktop and publish through that mechanism. Benefits being, as we'll get into sort of in some of the later slides, a lot of your front-end services disappear. So your brokers and gateways and things of that nature, all that disappears in the Azure world because Microsoft just manages it for you. And this can also be a more secure mechanism as we don't need to open up any firewall ports. So, you know, that there might be a good path forward for customers who've already made an investment in remote desktop services and want to continue to leverage that while taking advantage of all the availability and scalability and redundancy and such that Azure brings to bear. And then lastly, from a deploy and scale perspective, again, Microsoft is global with their Azure data centers, right? So we're 60 regions, over 140 countries at this point. We have consistent experience regardless of whether you're building in North America, Europe, or Asia. It's consistent experience across the board, which is great. Azure Virtual Desktop is tied into our Azure Management Portal or our ARM portal. And so again, a very familiar look and feel at how we actually deploy. We're able to take advantage of the security compliance features that both Windows and Azure bring to bear. So if we deploy technologies like multi-factor authentication for our users, it's very easy to take that implementation and apply it to our Azure Virtual Desktop instance. And then for those organizations that might have requirements that fall outside of what's natively available in Azure Virtual Desktop, we do have a partner ecosystem that fills in some of those gaps and provides some of that additional functionality that organizations may need. So the reasons we build on Azure, again, it comes down to standardization across the globe, right? And security. So standardization, again, whether we're building North America, Asia, Europe, no matter where we are, with Azure, we have consistent resource availability. So we can build the exact same infrastructure in all of our different regions, which cuts down on the burden on IT and makes sure that we're providing a consistent end user experience. We're also able to start taking advantage of things like PaaS, our platform as a service, and containers and microservices, and some of those other advanced features that we get by moving into Azure that we wouldn't have easily with a traditional data center. As noted, this is a global solution. So if you are supporting users in multiple geographies, Azure just makes it really easy to do that. And then from a security stance, Microsoft has their Cyber Defense Operations Center, which is over 3,500 professionals that their entire job is just focusing on Microsoft cloud security, right? And that's both for their own products on the internet, as well as their client-facing environments like Office 365 and Azure. They invest a wealth of money in all that while they use to support their own environment, also trickle down to ensure that you customer environments are supported as well and secured. And they obviously do a much better job than most of us could individually, given the number of resources and the amount of money that Microsoft can actually throw at security that would be unrealistic for most other organizations. When we look at a high-level architecture, so one of the nice things that with Azure Virtual Desktop is, again, we're really only focusing on the components that we truly care about, right? So if we look under the top, we have your subscription. So this would be your Azure subscription within your Azure tenant. Okay, we're looking at our desktop experience, we're looking at remote applications, and again, with a mix of different operating systems available to us. And then from a management and policies perspective, we're looking at the OS image, we're looking at applications and profile management. We're looking at how we manage user density and user access to applications, right? Those are really the areas that are adding value to the business. Everything else is just surrounding technology that we need to make that deployment successful. With Azure Virtual Desktop, all those additional sort of fringe or surrounding services are supported by Microsoft and mean that we don't need to actually worry about them, right? So clients, management, brokers, gateways, load balancing, all the underlying hardware or infrastructure all that is managed by Microsoft. So we can really focus in on investing our time into elements that add value to the business, such as, again, publishing new applications or improving the overall end user experience or whatever that looks like, that allows us to really hone in on the areas that we care about. We do have the ability to tie back to on-prem, so either with Express or out of VPN. So if you already have Azure in play today, or it's going to be a pending part of the environment, typically you're going to have site-to-site VPN. Azure Virtual Desktop is going to leverage that to allow you to access both resources in Azure, as well as any server resources you may still have on-prem. From an authentication perspective, we're actually using a hybrid approach today. So we're leveraging Azure Active Directory to prevent access to Azure. And then the AVD hosts are actually Active Directory joined, typically. And so we have that as a control mechanism as well. It's largely fairly seamless for users, so they're not really having to worry about a double login experience, but there are both sets of identities that get used to provide different functionality. If you're a System Center Configuration Manager or SCCM customer, or you're leveraging Microsoft Intune or Endpoint Manager, these desktops can be enrolled in either of those solutions and supported the same way we would traditional desktops. So whether it's patching, whether it's antivirus, whether it's application deployment, that we can do a lot of the same things with these VDI hosts that we would with traditional endpoints. And then we also support devices that are running non-Windows operating systems with Linux and other things as well to be able to support different workloads or different user endpoints that we might need to support. When we look at security as a whole, again, because we're tying into Microsoft's cloud ecosystem, we're able to take advantage of all the existing investments that we've already made in Microsoft security. So from an identity perspective, again, MFA and conditional access, right? For those who might not be familiar with conditional access, it's basically building large allow or deny rules, right? So a great example is if you're maybe a North American operation with conditional access, you can say any connection type of any form that originates from outside of North America, we're just automatically going to deny that. We know none of our users live outside of North America. Therefore, anybody trying to connect from a remote location is likely an imposter or somebody trying to compromise an account. So we're just going to automatically deny. And then we typically will build a vacation group where if somebody is traveling outside of the region, we drop that user into that vacation group. They can then connect from whatever region of the world they happen to be in, but our default is a deny, right? For anybody outside of our specific geographic region. With both MFA and conditional access, if we have these already provisioned for Microsoft 365, this can be easily extended out to support Azure Virtual Desktop as well. So we can take advantage of that existing investment. From an endpoint protection perspective, so if you're leveraging Microsoft Defender for Endpoint, for example, Azure Virtual Desktop is just natively supported. And so again, we can treat this the same as we would any other traditional device in the environment. From a networking perspective, we leverage Reverse Connect. So I did touch on briefly, we don't need to worry about opening up ports anymore, right? So with traditional remote desktop services, we need to open up port 3389 in order to provide access into our environment. With Azure Virtual Desktop, there's no port requirements. Users authenticate against Azure, and then Azure presents back to the user the resources that are available to them. And so because we have this mechanism, we don't need to actually RDP into our environment itself. It all gets handled seamlessly between the client and Azure without having to worry about that sort of a security risk. From an infrastructure perspective, again, we have secure hardware capabilities, all the compliance certifications that Microsoft applies to their Azure data center. And from a data, we have data access policies and encryption, all of which are available. And at the bottom, you can see a SIM. You can see SIM is listed. So that would be Azure Sentinel or other third party. Obviously, we prefer Azure Sentinel, big Microsoft shop. But you can take the logs from all these different elements, from identity to networking to data, aggregate all of that. And with a SIM, it gives you a single pane of glass or a single point of visibility across what's happening from a security stance across your entire business. And because Azure Virtual Desktop ties naturally into all these existing security products, those logs will get captured as well and give us that same visibility into our Azure Virtual Desktop or EVD environment. When we look at traditional VDI or IDS solutions, as mentioned, there's a whole bunch of pieces that we need to worry about, right? So we have user entitlement, we have brokering services, we have to worry about our image management and applications, licensing, maintenance, networking, all the underlying hardware and storage and hosting. Right? These are what we would deal with a traditional on-prem or colo-located server infrastructure. When we move to Azure Virtual Desktop, Microsoft is managing all the underlying stuff that's necessary, but really not adding value to the business, right? How brokering manages or how our gateways manage. At the end of the day, we probably don't care so much. We just want to make sure the services are in place and that they're able to allocate users to the right locations, right? So all we really care about is user entitlement. So what users have access to what desktops and what applications, and then the image management itself. So what applications we actually publish as part of the solution. So a lot of the overhead just natively as part of the solution disappeared because Microsoft manages that for you. If we look at virtualization before Azure Virtual Desktop, we really had two paths available to us. So you had our Windows Server desktop experience, be it 2019 or 2022 or whatever the case may be. This did allow us to stack multiple users on a given host, but we had limitations. We were bound to Win32-based apps, and we had to leverage traditional perpetual or license key-based Office versions. And because that's a server operating system, we're looking at a long-term servicing channel, right? We're only releasing new features as part of that three-year refresh as we move from Server 2019 to Server 2022, for example. On the flip side, we've had just that single session modern experience. It could be Windows 10 or 11. It's typically a one-to-one ratio. We can leverage both Win32 and UWP-based apps. We can leverage Office from our Microsoft 365 investment. So again, authentication or licensing is now happening through the user account rather than traditional product keys. And because it's a client-based operating system, we're able to take advantage of that annual or semi-annual update that Microsoft provides. With AVD, we get the best of both worlds. So we're able to take advantage of all the key capabilities that Windows 10 or 11 Enterprise brings to us, but we're able to take advantage of the fact that we now can stack multiple users on that host. Right? So this gives us the best of both worlds. It allows us to minimize the amount of hardware that we need to deploy to support our user community, while still providing all the rich capabilities that we would expect from a client operating system. When we look at deployment options for AVD, we have a number of different elements that come into play. From a compute perspective, we can choose any VM type that Azure has available in our region, right? So this gives us a ton of flexibility, you know, whether we want a balanced CPU and memory counts, whether we have applications that we know are very CPU intensive, but lower on the memory requirements. We can build our Azure Virtual Desktop using a VM image that has a higher core count than normal. Or maybe we have an application that is very memory intensive that we want to publish. We can again choose a VM type that scales up to support a larger memory size while keeping our core count down. So there's hundreds of different Azure virtual machine types available to us. All of those are available to us in Azure Virtual Desktop as sources for our hostful VMs. We have the choice of whether we want to lift and shift or build net new. So if you have an existing image and or solution that you want to port in, we can look to do that. Again, maybe that's RDS. Maybe that's just a certified gold image you use across all of your desktops and you want to use that as the foundation for your VDI environment as well. Or Microsoft has a published gallery of different desktop operating systems, some which have Microsoft Office already pre-installed and other optimizations and such. So we can build that greenfield environment instead. As noted, we have the ability to support both personal and pooled virtual machines. So depending on what our use cases and what our specific user requirements are, we can decide whether a user gets a dedicated desktop or whether they just get added to a desktop pool where there's allocated resources on whatever host they connect to at any point in time. For our profile perspective, we have an integration with a technology called FSLogix that opens up the door to a bunch of possibilities. So the first is the ability for fast login times and application launch times. So as I did mention in sort of one of the earlier slides, with the AVD solution, everything that is unique to that user gets stored on a standalone disk. And that's files, that's customizations, that's registry keys that are unique to that user. Everything specific to that user gets stored on a standalone disk. And because it's an actual a virtual disk, again, our OST file is there and ready. Our OneDrive cache data is there and ready. So it makes it very easy for users to be immediately productive, to be able to launch things quickly. Outlook, a great example with the traditional RDS. While a lot of us did use things like network shares to store OST files and such for Outlook, it wasn't really a supported configuration and we dealt with corruption and such. So if a user was logging into a remote desktop services host they'd never logged into before, and they have a large mailbox, that OST would get created on the fly. And now you've got to deal with all this caching stuff. With this solution in AVD, because that OST is just always available to you, no matter what desktop you connect to, everything that was historical is immediately available, which is makes for a much better end user experience. We have the ability to either store that data on things like Azure files or NetApp files or file servers or file server clusters. So we get a bunch of different mechanisms that we can use to store all that user profile information. From an application perspective, we have a couple different ways in which we can manage that as well. So the one that's identified here is what's called app masking. So where historically we might have built different gold images to support different departments or different teams that have different application requirements, with app masking, we have the ability to leverage a single image to overload it with every application that all your users need. And then with app masking, we can hide the applications that aren't relevant to that user. So everything is preloaded. It allows us to work from a single gold image, but because we're able to customize that end user experience, we don't need to worry about users having visibility into applications that they shouldn't. So this can make it a lot easier to support a disparate or a distributed environment where you have multiple departments with different types of applications they need to support while still making it relatively simple. But as we talk about compute, so again, we have this personal or pool desktop model available to us. Personal desktops are really for heavy performance users. So again, whether it's CAD or CAM or SAP or other really resource intensive applications, we have the ability to provision an individual or personal desktop for that user. And the benefit is this desktop is on 24/7. It's just always available, right? So it makes it very easy. You can start working on a Word document, get halfway through, end your session, go home, reconnect in that same session, pick up exactly where you left off, because that's a persistent desktop that's unique to you that's just always online and available. Obviously, there are cost implications to that. And so we really want to identify the users that truly need that type of customization and performance. To the majority of our users, we have pooled desktops, which allows us to do multi-session, right? So these are our mid-tier workers. Most of our office workers will typically fall under pooled desktops, right? People who spend their day in Word and Excel and Outlook and some of our other core apps that aren't incredibly resource intensive. With them, we look to pool because this provides us a much more cost-effective means of providing virtual desktop to users and cuts down on the amount of administration that we need to support. But if we have 100 users, we don't want to have to build 100 personal desktops for them. We'd much rather build maybe 10 desktops, knowing we can support 10 users on each one, right? Or 20 users on each one, and we'll have to build 5. So we get a lot more flexibility with pooled desktops and allows us to really streamline things. We touched on FS Logix profiles. So this is a virtual disk or a VHD file, similar approach to Universal Print. It gets mounted to login as part of the login experience. There are no target storage requirements. So the nice thing with this is your Windows 10 image, because everything unique to that user is stored on a separate standalone disk, the user never writes to your Windows desktop or to your Windows image itself, right? So everything that user writes, any temp files, registry keys, all of that is stored in that standalone VHD that's unique to that user. And so it allows us to keep our image pristine because it only includes the applications and our operating system, none of our user data. Size of profile doesn't impact login time. So whether you have somebody with a 50 meg mailbox or a 500 gig mailbox, the login time is exactly the same because the point is that information is already cached in a user's OS key file, right? And so the size of that file becomes irrelevant if it's already there and pre-cached. It's just being attached to part of the login experience. We're able to take advantage of things like block transfer to decrease network utilization. We have Windows Cache Manager. So in the event that we lost access to that person's virtual disk for some reason, we'll cache the changes on the AVD host. And then when that personal disk becomes available again, we'll just write all those changes together at the same time. As noted, everything specific to that user gets redirected, no matter what it is, temp files, registry, files, settings, you name it. And while this is actually stored in a separate disk, the way FS Logix works, it does make it appear like it is locally available. And so applications don't get confused. It just looks like that's part of the standard operating system, even though it's being maintained separately. For applications, so we did talk through app masking, what that entails. And that's really our historical approach to managing applications. But in a more forward-looking approach, we have what's called MSIX and MSIX App Attach. So most of you are going to be familiar with MSI files, or traditional mechanism for installation. With MSIX, we can actually run through the installation process for an application. But again, rather than installing the application inside of our Windows 11 desktop, we're actually installing it to a standalone VHD or virtual disk file. Number of benefits here. One, it means your image again is pristine, right? You might have the Office files installed, nothing else. It makes it very easy to manage that image. With having applications stored in individual VHD files, one, it helps ensure that when we build that user experience, when a user logs in, because we can assign via security group, we can dictate what applications get built as part of that image and present it to the user. But the nice thing is now we only have one instance of an application. So let's take Adobe Reader, for example. So we're going to take a 100 user scenario again. We've built out 10 AVD hosts to support them and install Adobe Reader. So traditionally, we need to go to each of those 10 hosts, install Adobe Reader, and that would then become presentable to all of our users. Adobe tends to update their product fairly frequently. So the next time that there's a refresh of that application, we would again need to go to each of those 10 hosts and install the new version of Adobe Reader. Now, that might be a manual install. It might be leveraging Intune or SCCM, but regardless, you're maintaining 10 separate instances of a given application. With MSIX App Attach, we only ever have one instance of that application. So the new version of Adobe Reader comes out, we package that new application or that new version as another VHD file. We replace the one that was already there. And the next time users log in, regardless of the desktop, they automatically get that new version of the application. All right, so it makes it far easier to support. As with most things, again, there's more preparatory work up front to make this a reality, but it does make life a whole lot simpler to start to support a variety of applications that might need different refresh cycles and such. Knowing we only ever need to package it once, drop it into the file share to replace the old, step back and let users just automatically get that new version of the application. When we talk about licensing, a number of customers are already licensed or are already eligible for Azure Virtual Desktop. On the client side, if you buy into the Microsoft 365 suite, so either it's E3 or E5, or the educational versions, A3 and A5, or Microsoft 365 Business Premium, you already have the Windows 10 or Windows 11 desktop license that you require for AVD. If you're an Office 365 user and don't have the Microsoft 365 SKU, then you'd be looking at the Windows 11 Enterprise or Windows 11 Education license that you need. And again, this is just another monthly subscription license, but that's the only license entitlement you really need in order to enable Azure Virtual Desktop. On the server side, if you have existing RDS CALs with Software Assurance, you need no additional licenses. You can take the existing servers, port it into Azure Virtual Desktop, publish, and away you go. When we look at sort of the bottom side of this, so a couple of things to note. With Azure Virtual Desktop, we have the ability to scale up and down. And I think we talked about that in a couple of the slides moving forward. But the nice thing is we're only paying for the resources we actually use while that the service is actually in use. Right? So we have the ability to spin down desktops that aren't actively being used, which means we're not paying the Azure consumption for those. We're still paying for storage because whether a VM is on or off, that storage cost is, we're still using storage. But it does allow us to shut down VMs and deallocate so that we're not having to pay for the memory and the CPU on VMs that we're not really using. Even though these are Windows 10 or 11 desktops, when they get provisioned, they're treated the same as Linux desktops from a pricing perspective. As many of you may know, when you provision a Windows desktop or a server in Azure, as part of the permanent billing, it automatically includes that Windows license component. So that is going to be a part of that permanent billing cost. With Azure Virtual Desktop, we know that we need a Windows 11 Enterprise or Education or an RDS CAL with SA, right? We're already coming to the party with our licenses. And so these VMs, when they get spun up, get treated as Linux so that we're only paying consumption costs to the actual hardware itself, CPU, memory, and storage, and we can park all the licensing. The last thing of note here is for those who might be familiar with reserved instances, these can be applied to Azure Virtual Desktop as well. Right, so we have different ways in which we can provide some cost savings and make life a little bit more manageable for organizations from a cost perspective. Being able to reserve instances where we pre-commit to either a 1 or 3 year term can have significant impacts on our overall cost. From a client perspective, we have a wide range of clients we support. So we have Windows Desktop, which is our most feature rich. We have our Windows Store client, which has a number of the core features, but continues to evolve. We have Android, iOS, and iPad. We have Mac OS, and then we have the web portal, which can be used for any of these operating systems or Linux clients and such as well. As you can see, depending on the client that we're connected to, We're going to have different levels of functionality available to us, but all of these should be sufficient to be able to allow a user to be productive. Not every instance may have all the bells and whistles, but this is also a list that continues to evolve and grow over time, where Microsoft is trying to add more and more functionality to each of these different client types to ideally reach some level of parity. I'll go through this quickly. So user connection flow. So this is talking back again through the fact that we don't need to open up any ports, right? So if we look to our right, we have our remote desktop clients. So it could be a phone, it could be a tablet, it could be a PC. In the middle, we have our Microsoft Managed Azure Services. So these are those front-end components for Azure Virtual Desktop that are out of our control that Microsoft's just managing on our behalf. And then to the far, we have what we care about, right? We have our Azure Active Directory. We have our virtual machines, our applications and user profiles and all the stuff that's truly unique to us. So when a user wants to establish a connection, they're going to launch the client, which is going to then connect to Azure Active Directory. And they're going to, if they're not pre-authenticated, they will then need to sign into Azure Active Directory. And again, maybe they'll get prompted for NSA. Maybe they'll have conditional access rules applied to the login experience. Regardless, they authenticate against Azure Active Directory and they receive a token. They then will take that token and present it to the web access. And the brokering services behind that will query its database to understand what is that user entitled to? Which desktop images is that user entitled to? Which published applications is that user entitled to? And once that's been determined, it'll be presented back to the actual user. The user then in the client or remote desktop client picks the resource they want. Maybe it's a full Windows 11 desktop again. Maybe it's just that published instance of QuickBooks that they need. But regardless, they select it. And then the remote desktop client will connect to the gateway. And then the broker orchestrates the connection from the host to the gateway, right? So we need no ports opened. All the management, all the interaction is managed through those Microsoft managed services. But it makes it a seamless experience that we can dynamically change based off of what users are allocated to, but provides a far more secure mechanism for logging into a virtual desktop experience than we would traditionally have had in an on-premises environment. Oops. Customers who've made investments in Citrix and VMware, you don't need to throw that out either. If Azure Virtual Desktop and Windows 11 multi-session is of interest to you, but you've already made commitments in Citrix Cloud or VMware Horizon, there are integration points. So we can take that existing investment, we can enhance it with some of the capabilities that Azure Virtual Desktop brings to bear, but continue to leverage the existing investment you've made in those technologies. And then essentially when they reach end of life, then you can look to move to Azure Virtual Desktop as a complete solution. But this allows customers who've made those investments in other third-party technologies at least open the door to some of the advanced features that we have with AVD. Choosing the best option. So as mentioned, we have three different options. I guess I only really talked about two of them. So we do have three options available to us. We talked a little bit about Windows 365, right? So this is your personalized cloud PC experience. It's simple, turnkey. Buy a license, drop it on the user, provision a PC, and let them run. It's a predictable per user per month cost. So again, when you subscribe to a Windows 365 license, sorry, lost words there. You're picking, I want 4 cores, I want 8 gigs of memory, I want a 256 gig disk, right? So you actually pick the resources you want in that license, but it does provide you that predictable per user per month pricing because there's no variability. It's easy to scale because we can simply reboot and add additional cores or memory or storage or whatever is required. And because it is the turnkey solution and Microsoft is managing all the underlying infrastructure, we don't need any VDI experience, right? So we can grab the Windows 365 license, provision it for the user, enroll that device in, let's say, Intune or Endpoint Manager, and manage it the exact same we would all the physical devices already in our organization, right? So this provides us a really easy path forward. Azure Virtual Desktop is built around flexibility and control, right? It's allowing you to build a solution specific to your use case or your needs and tailor it to fit the requirements of the business, right? So we have the ability to leverage multi-session Windows VMs, right? So again, maybe 10 hosts for 100 users versus with Windows 365, we would need 100 hosts for 100 users if everybody gets a dedicated desktop. We have the ability to support different data residency and geo requirements. We have the ability to remote app stream. And this is a huge benefit. As I did talk to earlier, a number of the customers I talked to, they don't necessarily want to provide a full desktop experience. Most of what you have works great the way it is now, But again, maybe you have a QuickBooks application or any other type of client server-based application, for example, where, you know, user connections on home across a VPN, when they launch the application, the experience sucks because you have all these latency concerns, right? So maybe you look to Azure Virtual Desktop just to support that application, publish that one remote app to the user. Now, when they launch QuickBooks, for example, the client and the server are both sitting in Azure. This experience is seamless because they're side by side, right? So we can integrate this into existing solutions without having to do a complete replace. We're able to leverage specialized GPUs and HPC workloads. So again, whether we need graphics cards or high compute requirements, all those can be met with AVD. And we can scale the solution to meet our requirements. So we didn't really touch on auto scale capabilities, but with Azure Virtual Desktop, we've had the ability to say what infrastructure we want running for what length of time. So let's say we're a traditional Monday to Friday, 9-to-5 shop. You know, if we have those 10 VMs, we don't necessarily want those 10 VMs running 24/7 and costing us money if we're really Monday to Friday, 9-to-5. So we can build auto scaling rules with AVD to say, you know what, Monday to Friday at 8 a.m., I want you to spin all 10 desktops up so that as users log in at 9 a.m., everybody gets a desktop and it's a positive experience. And then Monday to Friday at 6 p.m., we're going to shut 9 of those 10 VMs down. So we'll still leave one. We'll move any live sessions to the one host. Yeah. Make sure that host is available 24/7. So if somebody needs to log in at 3 a.m. on Sunday, there is a desktop available. But the other 9 VMs, we're going to shut down outside of business hours. So while we're still paying for storage, we're not paying for CPU or memory. And if all of a sudden everybody in the company decides to log in at 3 a.m. on Sunday with auto scale, the infrastructure will scale itself back up to support that. So we had that sort of flexibility in how we actually want to manage your cost. Obviously, if you're a 24/7 shop, you're not likely to spin down infrastructure. And that's where we would use things like reserved instances and such to help manage costs. But we get that sort of flexibility available to us in AVD that we wouldn't have with Windows 365. And then lastly, we have our Azure Virtual Desktop with either Citrix or VMware, right? So this is our hybrid approach. Taking advantage of the existing investments that we've made in either Citrix or VMware, taking advantage of all of the skills and such that we already have around VDI, and creating that multi-cloud or hybrid solution where we still have a single control plane, can manage it in a single instance, but we're able to take advantage of some of those AVD features like multi-session Windows 11, while continuing the investment that we've already made. So that's sort of an if then else. So you have a couple of paths forward. And like I said, a lot of this is really going to come down to what your specific business needs are. If all you really want is desktop as a service, right? Maybe you're hiring developers in different parts of the world. It's not feasible or it doesn't make sense to ship them a laptop, or you want to ensure that those remote users can connect and do the work they need to, but you want to isolate the environment so they can't actually pull any data down to their endpoint. Windows 365 is a great solution. It's easy, it's quick, it's predictable per month per user cost. Again, there's really not a whole lot of management requirements. You know exactly what the cost for that user is going to be, and allows you to provision that desktop in a matter of minutes and get that user productive. If you want a more nuanced solution where you want remote application streaming, you want to take advantage of multi-session because you know you have a bunch of users who don't need dedicated desktops. Or maybe you've already made investments in Citrix or VMware, or have GPU requirements or anything along those lines, that's really Azure Virtual Desktop, where we can actually tailor and build the experience that you need specifically to meet your business requirements. And then if you're looking at personalized persistent desktops, it's going to come down to what makes sense for the business. And some of it may be a matter of what your other use cases are, right? So if you require desktop as a service for the majority of your users or a subset, then when you're looking at more personalized persistent desktops, maybe you stay the Windows 365 paths. If you know that you needed application streaming and multi-session and all the other reasons that you might have moved down the AVD path, then for your personalized desktops, chances are you would deploy that through AVD as well. You don't have to, you can mix and match, but for personalized persistent desktops, there's really either solution could make sense. And a lot of it's going to come down to your specific requirements and what other requirements you have that's going to influence what your VDI solution is going to look like. Thank you, everybody, for spending the time with us this afternoon. Hopefully, this session has been valuable.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of What the Tech, proudly sponsored by ProServe IT. We trust that our exploration of Azure Virtual Desktop has provided valuable insights into maximizing flexibility and control for your virtual desktop infrastructure. To recap, we discussed the benefits of Windows 365 for Swift deployments, the customizable solutions offered by Azure Virtual Desktop, and seamless integration possibilities with existing investments in Citrix or VMware. Stay connected with us for our next episode, where we'll delve even deeper into Azure VMware solutions for your cloud migration. The world of technology is ever evolving, and there's always more to discover. So stay engaged, stay curious, and stay tuned for more exciting discussions ahead. Until next time, goodbye, and keep exploring the realms of technology with us.